So let's start with prayer. God, thank you that you are in our midst. Thank you that you love us. Thank you that you created us with the ability to experience that love in your presence. God, as we talk about our journeys today, we ask for clarity of speech and thought. And we ask that you would meet us in the midst of the stories that we tell and that we hear. And that your truth would be evident to us. In Jesus' name. We're all going to take about 10 minutes. The three of us are going to take about 10 minutes apiece. And as you well know, there's no possible way to fully encapsulate our ex-gay experiences in 10 minutes. But we want to at least give a taste of what we've been through, because I think you'll hear a pretty decent variety of experiences here. I was hoping, just so you know, I was hoping LaDonna could be here, but she's got a couple of other things on her mind at this point. But LaDonna actually did a live-in program, which is different than the experiences that we've had. But if you ever get a chance to sit down and talk to LaDonna about her ex-gay experience, pretty fascinating stuff. So, and some of you may even know LaDonna from those years too. So I'm gonna take my watch after so I can see it, because once I get started, it's tough. And I will keep myself on time, and I'll keep you guys on time too. Yes, I see that hand.
No, there's a pot there too.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, thank you.
Excellent.
So you can all hold on, like my breath up is 2 minutes sign. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Yeah. So I grew up in Eastern Washington State, in a small town, and was a miserable kid because I was attracted to boys my age. And at the age of 14, I was an atheist, because I asked God to help me in this problem, and God didn't help me. And I figured that if there was a God, God would love me, and God would want to help me. So because I experienced no help from God, I figured there must not be anybody there to answer the prayer. I was not a very happy atheist, because I was left with all the problems I had before, but just with no possible solution. So when I was 16, I was invited to go to a youth retreat through a local Presbyterian church, and I went and I heard the gospel message for the first time. And interestingly enough, in hearing Alan speak this morning, through a Campus Crusade for Christ for Spiritual Laws track, you know, and that's how I came to faith. And was not raised in a church, was not raised in a home that talked about homosexuality at all. But there's a lot of stuff we didn't talk about. And that was one of them. But I had this sense that this was not the right thing to do or be. And these were the days of Anita Bryant, just to give you a snapshot. And so my image of gay people was gay pride parades that I would see on television, and Anita Bryant preaching against those people. And I remember thinking, that doesn't really look like me.
Anita Bryant.
I can't pull off the bouffant. It just doesn't.
Let's see that Christ shoes.
But yeah. But yet, culturally, that didn't look like me. But yet, I was attracted to men. So, I asked my pastor and youth leaders, told them all I struggle with this. To a person, they all said, we don't know what to tell you, except that this is not what God wants for your life. To their credit, they did not try to fix me. They didn't know what to do. So I went to college, got involved in Campus Crusade for Christ, became a leader in Campus Crusade, knew of Patty Bergen, interestingly enough. grew in my faith, was surrounded by remarkable, remarkable people who loved me dearly. In my church, in my crusade fellowship, at school, at my church in college, my fundamentalist evangelical free church, godly men and women who loved me, and I had a great experience, and I had friends, and I had this inner awful, awful turmoil. And the people who knew me well knew that I struggled. And again, nobody had any answers for me. Graduated from college with a very rich experience. Applied to go on staff with Campus Crusade for Christ. Filled out the application. They asked on the application, "Have you ever had any homosexual experiences?" And I was either too smart or too stupid to lie, depending on how you look at it. And I said, "Yes, but," and by that time I had had a couple experiences. "But I'm not a child molester, you know, I'm okay, this is going to be all right." They called me. To their credit, they did not put me on staff. Thank God for me and whoever else's lives I might have ruined. And they said, "We'd love to have you on staff, but we want you to be in counseling for a year, and then we want you to contact us again." I was devastated because there's no reason in the world that I could tell anybody in my life why I wasn't accepted on staff, because I should have been. So everybody who would know there's something up. So I had to tell my parents for the first time that I was, then this was at, you know, at age 23, 24. I had to tell them that I had this problem. I started in counseling in my hometown, and then I heard about Metanoia Ministries in Seattle, which was an ex-gay ministry. And I wrote to Doug Houck, who was the director there, very lovely, very caring man. Wrote him a letter, asked all these questions. He wrote me back, answered all the questions, packed my bags, moved to Seattle, 300 miles west, and was in the Metanoia program for 2.5 years. The old Homosexuals Anonymous format, the 14-step groups every week, and then personal counseling with the director. And a lot of good things happened during those 2.5 years. Lots of good things. A lot of healing happened for me during that time. I had dated a woman through high school and college, had broken that off because I loved her, but I just knew that I couldn't marry her. I assumed it was her or me or something. I had begun to date another woman and continued to date her through my ex-gay days. We began to talk about marriage. Life was good for me. I was doing youth ministry. I was feeling really good. Went on vacation by myself, which was stupid. Went in my first gay bar and had an anonymous sexual experience for the first time in 5 years. I had no sex in 5 years. And the bottom fell out for me. Experienced pain like I never experienced before in my life. And by that time I had stopped doing counseling, every once in a while I'd drop in to the support group. Went back in, threw myself back into that. 6 months later, started seminary in Pasadena, California, at Fuller Theological Seminary. Started the ordination process. Got involved in an ex-gay ministry through Desert Stream called Turning Point. And sort of that old 14-step group in Pasadena. And was plugging along, eventually left Fuller, really still struggling, trying to figure it all out. Went home to spend some time with this woman that I was dating to see if we were going to get married or not. And I sat down with her, and she said, "Ron, the courtship is supposed to be the fun part. The marriage is the work." She said, "I feel like this has been nothing but work." And she said, and I said, "Well, you know what? I know myself well enough to know that it's going to be work for a lot longer if we get married." She said, I don't think I can do that. And again, another decision in my life made by somebody else that was the best decision ever. And that really knocked the blocks out from under me. And a year later, I finally came to the conclusion that my orientation had changed. I left the church. By this time, I was working for a large Presbyterian church in the Bay Area. I left staff. And I began to, for the first time in my life, think about other options. And for the first time in my life, I actually studied the passages, the scripture passages. In all of the years of my ex-gay, this is like 7-year period that I'm describing here. In all the years in seminary, never once did I ever think, not that I ever study them, did I ever think about studying them. Never occurred to me. And I began to meet some people who had different perspectives. So I began to look. Because I knew if I was going to change my mind about this stuff, that I was going to have to find it in the scriptures. I knew myself well enough to know that. So I began to allow myself to get to know other gay people and found out they were remarkably normal. And I had been terrified to get to know gay people before because of what might happen. I met my first gay Christians through Evangelicals Concern in San Francisco, and very slowly began to figure it out. And at the beginning, what's important at the beginning was that I didn't set, when I realized that my orientation had changed, I did not set out to become okay with being gay. I just said, God, I just want to be at peace. I just want to be at peace. I don't care whether I'm gay, I don't care whether I'm straight, I don't care whether I'm single or married, I just want to be at peace. I don't care anymore. And God eventually answered that prayer. And today I am about as well integrated in my faith as and my sexuality as I can be. Still have doubts sometimes. Still have questions. Still have lots of questions. I have a set of things that I feel confident about the scriptures, and I have other things I just don't know about the scriptures. And when I teach all that stuff, I'm very honest about that. But that's the gist of my journey. And I've been involved in EC for 10 years now, trying to help other folks. Jamie, why don't you go next?
My official ex-gay experience has only been probably about 6 months. So I'm listening to all of you go around and I'm like, wow, I'm not probably really as qualified as a lot of these other people to talk about it. But as you started sharing your story, I started realizing that the majority of my life has been ex-gay in many ways, and that's because I grew up as a pastor's kid and was very involved in a fundamentalist home. So not only were we very fundamentalist on Sunday, but all through the week as well. And just my dad was a man who was very quiet and didn't want to talk about much of anything except if you were going to talk about God, and then he would talk to you. So I spent a lot of my youth asking questions about God so that I could get to know him better. And I think that was a good thing in many ways, because I developed a passion for God that I'm not sure that maybe I would have. Is that the best way to raise a child? I'm not sure. But hindsight, I think I developed a love for God that maybe would not have grown in other ways. And so I'm very thankful for that. But it led me to really pour my heart and soul into things around God and doing things to make God happy, because I knew at a very early age that I was very odd as a fifth grade child, and I had a lot of experiences being much younger where people would ask me a lot, you know, are you a boy or a girl, and I had hair down to my rear end half, you know, practically. I'm like, can't you not tell? But apparently I just ran around like a crazy person, and so a lot of my peers would ask questions like that, and I just so that was hard as a kid to realize, ooh, I don't fit in very well. And in fifth grade, very distinctly, I fell deeply in love with a dear friend of mine, and we spent tons of time together. And fifth grade, you're thinking, okay, I can hardly fall in love. Some of the purest loves I think you develop are when you're very young. And I did not understand why I just wanted to be with this person so much and just wanted to be closer and closer and closer. I just couldn't be close enough. And I didn't understand what that meant, but I came home one day so riddled with pain over the fact that I didn't understand all these feelings I had. And so I was, you know, my mom and dad, they were concerned. I'm crying in my room in fifth grade. That's so typical. And I started sharing this story about how I just love this woman so much, and I just, you know, this girlfriend in my class. And they just had no, I mean, the expressions on their face were horrifying to me. They had no clue. They didn't understand. They were totally baffled. They had no idea what to say to me. And I, all of a sudden, was scared to death. Like, here are my parents. They're supposed to know everything, and they don't even know anything about me. And so right away I started realizing, okay, this is a much bigger issue, and I need to be keeping this inside from now on because people do not get me, and I'm really weird, and I'm way out. So right away I started realizing, well, God had actually probably just put me in the wrong body, because I wanted to be Tarzan, and my dreams were about saving women, you know, and Cheetah was my best friend, and so I had all these... you know, dreams. And so every game we ever played is in the neighborhood, no matter if it's cops or robbers or football, I was always Tarzan, and I was always my poor mother, she was very embarrassed, but
and now the quarterback, Tarzan.
Exactly. So anyway, I had a very interesting childhood, and so I think I really buried my passion into finding God and just really trying to work out the fact that I'm so different and that people look at me so weird. And so I had a lot of shame. I went into high school and I can remember passing people in the hall, not even being able to look at them in the face because I was so afraid they would tell me that I was so ugly and I was so disgusting and I didn't even have the right to look at them, and just so just riddled by shame. And so hence then, you know, where do you pour your energy? So I just totally poured it into God, and even started this Christian club in my high school, and decided to go to Bible college, went to Bible college, and of course it was a really conservative Christian, you know, so girls in one set of dorms and boys in another, and in the dorms by 11 and lights out at 1, and I mean just really very fundamentalist. And so my dad used to preach from the pulpit that, you know, the point of perversion is homosexuality. That's how we know our culture has, you know, gotten to the deepest place of sin, is when people, you know, are gay. And so I'm listening to this many weeks on end, and growing up just realizing, wow, there's some real problems. And so, like Ed, I actually began searching myself, and I can remember the day that I got this list of books that would help me not be gay anymore. And of course, I didn't tell anyone, so I was just sneaking it around like crazy, but I had purchased 8 books through the mail and started reading them like crazy, and was so discouraged because I was hearing stories about 8 and 12 years of time that would have to pass by that people were trying to, and then in the end, they never really got rid of these feelings. And I mean, I was young. I was like, oh my gosh, I have this whole life ahead of me. I cannot live in this kind of torture because I feel like something's really wrong. So I came out to my best friend in college, and my very first couple of weeks there. And you know, so then the big plan was, how do we keep Jamie celibate and doing what she should be doing in God? And then I got all my ex-gay books and was reading through them. And finally, my senior year in college, I just got to a place where I felt so worried. I had 2 lesbian coaches. And as a lesbian, that was so hard for me because they were open about it, and I realized that, and it was like, okay, but I know I'm gay, but I can't be gay. And so it was just really weird for me to be around that, and it just really accentuated the fact that I could not ignore it. It just was in my face every day. So I ended up going ahead and enrolling in a small ex-gay ministry, and I think it was really interesting what you were saying about people grabbing ex-gay books and going ahead and trying to convert people. And so it was in Portland, Oregon, and it was a pastor and his wife, and I just remember thinking when I first met her, I'm like, oh, she's gay too. And of course she was married and had kids, and you know, told me for sure she wasn't gay at all and just never had those issues at all, but you know, she was really wanting to help you know, people come out of the lifestyle. And at the point that I had decided to do ex-gay, I was so I had come so far in exhaustion for not being able to find answers myself, I was starting to reach out to get answers from other people. And so what worried me was that the things that she told me were the things that I had learned all of my life, which was basically, I need to be praying more, I need to be reading my Bible more, and I need to be just basically on my knees before God, accentuating that relationship. I'm thinking to myself, I've done that all of my life. This is where I am seeking all of my answers from. No answers are coming. God hasn't made me a boy yet. God hasn't taken these feelings away yet. You know, I've asked every prayer I can ask, and nothing is changing. I've run out of desperation. I've come to you after however many years, and you told me the same thing. And so I got to a place where I said, I think I'm ready to be done with life. I said, I don't want to go here anymore. I have, you know, if I'm 20 now and I'm looking at another 60 years of life, I cannot live like this. And when I finally got to that place where I was considering taking my life, I actually decided to go to my dad and tell him. And that was really hard to try to figure out how to do that. But I wrote him a note and was shockingly surprised at the fact that he told me he had already known. And he told me for me not to worry, and that I was probably getting a little too riled up and excited about this fact, and I should just, you know, not worry, and that we would concentrate on helping me be celibate and it would be okay. So I was just flabbergasted at his response, very blessed. And after a number of years, it's probably been 10 or 11 years since I've come out to him, and he is 180 degrees the other way now. So he is on my side, realizing that God lives in me and loves me and deeply. And he now goes to his Bible studies and challenges other people about us. So I'm blessed by that. And I never would have ever guessed that when I started my journey. And I can remember being at the Seattle Pride Parade for the first time, seeing people I go by and just weeping, because I was like, my family will never get there. So they're getting there. So.
Well, Hugh, I was interested in Tarzan too, but not. Well, I was involved in X-Gay ministry for, I guess, the best part of 8 or 9 years, effectively, from the time I first started going to one in London in about 1986, where I met James. And then in 1987 I came to the States and did some training with a ministry called Love in Action in San Rafael, just north of San Francisco. And I immensely enjoyed my time with them. It was about 4 months out there. And I'd always had a kind of vision for Christian community, where I was aware that there were many lonely people in churches anyway, not just gay people. There were divorced people and widowed people and people who'd never married, for all sorts of reasons. And I just knew that, I felt that the church should be a place where, as brothers and sisters, we should all love and care for one another, and there shouldn't be any lonely people. And the fact that gay people, it wouldn't be right for them to have sex together, was asking no more than for any other single person who couldn't marry or wasn't married for one reason or another. And I was very idealistic about my vision for Christian community. And because Love in Action ran a residential program called Steps Out of Homosexuality, but it was a good discipleship program, really, in many ways. It wasn't all about homosexuality by any means. It had a lot of very good basic Christian teaching that would have been good for any Christian to go through. I enjoyed the experience very much. And it was genuinely a very loving community where you could be completely yourself, you could be completely open about all your gay issues, and nobody was going to be shocked or disapproving. And there's just a very gentle view maintained that, well, we all have our areas of temptation in life, and this is just the battleground for gay people, but we've all got to learn to submit completely to Christ, regard Jesus as Lord, and follow him. And it just wouldn't be appropriate as a Christian to follow him and go pursuing gay relationships or having any gay sex. So for me, that was a very comfortable experience, because I'd grown up terrified of the implications of my own homosexuality. From about the age of 13, I knew I was gay, but that was, in those days, to be a gay person was like being a paedophile today. You know, you were the scum of the earth, and you were dangerous to society and to everybody else.
And that whole attitude terrified me. And in those days, of course, homosexual practice was against the law as well, so it's a criminal offence to act out. And I couldn't understand what it was about me that was so terrible that I could be sent to prison or would be considered a liability in that way. But whatever it was, I was determined not to try and go down that way. And I felt in my early days as a Christian, going to a marvelous church where the Bible was well taught and so on, I felt if I in any way acknowledged my own homosexuality, then I would become like a cancer in the Christian fellowship, but I would be, you know, like a servant of Satan planted there to deceive and to destroy other people. That's how bad I thought it was to be gay. During my 20s, I did meet two gay male Christian couples, and in the most extraordinarily natural way, it just came about that I met them through other friends who thought I ought to hear their story. And in both instances, they lived in different parts of the country, but in both instances they were men who'd gone through years and years of struggle trying to overcome. One of them had gone through shock, electric shock treatment and so on, and had attempted suicide on a couple of occasions, been unsuccessful of course, but finally accepted he was gay and prayed that God would give him a partner, found somebody almost immediately, another school teacher in the school he was working in. And they've been in a partnership ever since, which is 26 or 27 years now. And their testimony was such a gentle, lovely testimony about how God had just led them and shown them that it was okay to be gay and that he loved them just as much and wanted to bless their lives. But hearing them and the other couple whose story is a bit different but equally impressive, there was a kind of window in my life when I thought maybe it is okay to be gay Christian. And I was really very encouraged by this, but my biggest fear was being deceived. And I think when Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6:9, you know, do not be deceived, such people will never enter the kingdom of heaven, I thought I'm in danger here of going down a slippery slope of self-deception. And I had too much of a personal vested interest in agreeing with this view. So I decided, well, if this was really true, then surely other Christians would be able to recognize the truth of it. And I went to my pastor at the church that I was going to. I told him I'd met these people, I told them what they'd said. And he was very, very calm. He didn't try and say that they were of the devil or anything else, but he just, well, I won't go into all that he said, but he in a very, very clever way, explained to me why he thought it couldn't be right. They just got a misconstrued what the scriptures were saying, and they were just perhaps very genuinely deceived, but it couldn't be that way. And because I trusted him, and he was a fine man of God, and so on, and I thought, well, I just got to accept that it's got to be celibacy. And he didn't treat me like I was demonized or as there's anything dreadful. He just said, well, we all have our battles and this is just your particular battle. And he's very reasonable about it and not reactionary at all. So because the fellowship I was in was so good and I couldn't bear the thought of losing all the friends I had, this is my life really, my security, I decided to accept that I had to be another way, or I had to somehow accept being celibate, which was a very difficult concept. And also the whole, a bit like for you, the whole appearance of the gay world outside, whether it's in Primark, just, I don't know if we had them in England then, but anyway, the whole gay world seemed very scary. I took myself once to a gay club in London. It took me about 3 months to pluck up the courage to go. And I finally went there, and the whole atmosphere there was just alien to me. I just didn't fit. Although I did meet somebody there and had my first sexual experience, but that was actually, it's a strange thing, the experience of going to the club was not positive at all. The experience of being with this guy was very positive. Somebody put it rather well recently at one of our meetings when they said, it felt like I joined the human race, because it just felt something so natural about it. But I couldn't accept this, and I had to decide, well, I've got to repent and I've got to go back. And it was as if God had opened this window of opportunity in my life to see there could be another way, but I couldn't go through it. And so that, if you like, that revelation or that acceptance closed. And after that, I couldn't have seen it that way again for years and years. I could only see it down the route of the traditional Christian view of things. Well, by 1986, there was a group meeting in London run by a ministry called the True Freedom Trust. And they would hold weekly meetings on Friday nights where there was worship and prayer and a meal together, where for the first time I met other gay Christians who were trying not to be gay. And they would never have called themselves an ex-gay ministry as such, because I think they were not wanting to be too triumphalistic, but nevertheless, the idea was that we should seek healing from this, and that there must be a better way than just having to accept a celibate life forever. And going there for a year, meeting James and making some other very good friends as well, led to me going to Love in Action, and then that led to me going and training with them for 4 months. And when I came back to England in 1988, the church I was going to then said, well, I'd given up my job and everything to do this, so I was wondering whether or not I should have gone to work with the True Freedom Trust or something, but I didn't feel any peace about that. And basically the elders of the church I was going to then said, well, we think you should start a ministry. There's very little happening in England. This one that I've referred to is actually based in the northwest of England and had a group in London. But there's very little else indeed. And so it seemed a good, sensible thing to begin a new ministry. And we called it Courage because it seemed to me that that's what it takes to deal with these issues, and I didn't want to suggest there are any quick and easy answers. And in fact, James, who followed with great interest the trip to America and everything else and kept in touch very faithfully, came and began working with me very soon after it began. And in many respects, it was a very, very exciting time because of my vision for a community house and so on. Amazingly, God opened the doors for us to begin our own community house, and we started finding people coming from all over Europe wanting to come. We never advertised, we never made any attempt to draw any custom, if you like. People just found out about us and would ring us up and say, I hear you're doing a live-in program, we want to be on it. And it was amazing how people came from all over the place. And the next few years were, largely speaking, a very exciting time. It felt like we were doing a very pioneering work. There was definitely a very loving, accepting environment, and we thought we were really at the sharp edge of what God was doing, and it was a very exciting place to be. And then in 1991 I got married, because I'd known Bren for many years, and we'd been good friends, but to me, I didn't want to spend the rest of my life as a celibate gay man. I just felt this was not good. And the fact that there was a woman there who would consider marrying me, knowing all about me and the ministry I was in, seemed to me an amazing provision of God. And in a way, it seemed a provision for her too, as she'd not married and she was getting on in years. And she was in full-time Christian ministry leading a church. And a lot of other people could kind of, it seemed to them as though we'd make a great couple together, you know, we'd be a great team. So we got married. And because I was so absolutely focused on trying to do things the right way, I never contemplated really whether I was still gay. I said to Bren quite clearly, I've never experienced any change in these feelings, but I know it wouldn't be the right way to go, so I'm not going to go that way, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to get married. But when we got married, we were then faced with a whole load of new challenges. For one thing, Bren found it's an immensely difficult adjustment to make, so the whole environment of community living and everything else. And in fact, I think she was shattered by it, really. It just was so different to anything she knew. And her perception of it was all these guys had major problems with women, which actually wasn't quite true, but the problems they had with women were not perhaps quite as she took it. But it was a very intimidating environment for her in many ways. And then I found myself constantly trying to juggle to be a responsible, loving husband and to care for her, to keep the ministry running, to try and cope with all the issues that were coming up, because by about the third or fourth year of running the program, what had started off so well, you know, and in such an exciting way, started to have more and more major problems, and which I won't even try and go into now, but by 1994, I think it was 94, we had to close it down, and it was that year that James felt that his time had come to move on, and that kind of all came together, and it had become such a strain for me by that time, that although I was very sad indeed to see it close, in another sense it was a relief. And so then we went back just to running weekly support groups, which we'd done before. And I began in the next few years to really, through keeping in touch with all the people who'd been on the Living Programme, I began to notice that none of them had really seen anything change in terms of their orientation, in spite of immense dedication. I mean, James had given up his job and sold his home, done everything to throw his lot in with this ministry, and made huge sacrifices, and so had a number of other people too. And I thought, how can it be that people could be so committed to following Christ and so sacrificial in all that they did, and God still did not meet, you know, answer the prayer of their hearts to change them. And especially when I then saw a number of people kind of giving up their faith, certainly dropping right out of church, questioning whether God even existed, and beginning to experiment with homosexual, anonymous sex very often. And I thought, what have we achieved out of all this? This is a terrible, terrible end result to come to, that people should be losing their faith. And I remember praying, God, if this is what the ex-gay ministry does to people, that it sets them up for this great hope, and then only for that hope to gradually be dashed, and for their very faith to be rocked and for, or even destroyed. I said, I just don't want to be in a ministry like this. I just don't want to have anything to do with it. This is a horrible scenario. But nevertheless, we still had a kind of community of people coming to the groups regularly, and some lots of lovely people came, and we were always getting new inquiries and so on. And so I started seriously looking at the question of whether or not it was a fair option for people to have a same-sex companion in a committed relationship, just as long as there's no sex. And we tried pursuing this, and I had a board of trustees, and I discussed this with them and with a lot of other people. And I realized that a lot of the questions we grappled with were not untypical kinds of struggles that pastors have in their own pastoral experience. And a local Baptist minister who I used to have lunch with regularly would talk about the struggles he would have pastorally towards couples who were living together and not married, and perhaps you have children, and many other moral issues that were concerns to the church, and where good Christian living was concerned. Anyway, because I'm running out of time, I began to feel more and more that Christians would talk about biblical values and biblical sexual standards of biblical sexuality, but I didn't feel that most of them had a really thorough grounding in what the Bible said about sexuality at all. And the more I looked at the scriptures myself, the more I felt that much of what was taught as being biblical in terms of sexual morality just wasn't biblical at all. It was on very shaky ground and had far more to do with our Victorian Christian heritage and Victorian values than biblical ones. And that kind of took the lid off it for me, and I felt more and more that fundamentally God made us in this world to need companionship. And all my belongings for Christian community to work so well, I began to see that it could not work for a lifetime for people in most cases and fulfill their needs. I'd by then seen so many people who'd been in close friendships with others almost give up those friendships to go and get married and go off somewhere else or pursue a career that took them in a different direction. And at the end of the day, however good Christian friendship may be, the fact of the matter is that it's not enough to give people the level of companionship and intimacy and belonging that the marriage provides. And I could see from my own marriage, although there may have been many shortcomings, that there are many good things about that that other people would never have the opportunity to enjoy unless they married or unless they accepted a same-sex partnership. So for me, in a way, the traditional biblical viewpoint on homosexuality just collapsed in front of my eyes, really. I thought, this simply is not appropriate use of the Bible. And I began to be convinced that neither Moses nor Paul would ever have intended us to use those texts for gay Christians. And in fact, to do so was an abuse of the scripture. And so, little by little, I was seeing more and more people beginning to take an interest in same-sex relationships. And in my heart, I just wanted to encourage them. I thought, I've got nothing else to offer. It's much better for you to enjoy a same-sex partnership. And gradually, even one of my trustees, who's a totally straight guy, pointed out to me the illogical proposition that people should have a close same-sex friendship that was completely non-sexual. And I thought, this is really odd. Here's a straight guy telling me that this just doesn't add up. It's really very fascinating. And so we began to speak about Courage having a new approach. this new approach began by just taking a very much more accepting view of gay people and just letting God do what he wanted to do in their lives. And then eventually I began publishing articles that said, if some people are Christian and gay and feel it's right for them to have a same-sex partnership, then we should respect that. At which point Exodus, of whom we've been members for years, couldn't cope anymore and pushed us out. They needed me to declare that this was sin, and I was no longer prepared to do so. And then we had another fallout with a group in England called the Evangelical Alliance, who said that if I couldn't state that homosexual sex was sin, then I couldn't basically be in membership any longer. And so we were pushed out of all of these organizations bit by bit and had to find our own path. But just shortly after dropping out of Exodus, we came across EC and came to our first conference in Denver 2 years ago. And what was so striking about that was that though Bren and I came to the conference wondering if it was a bit of a weird and wacky sort of group, a bit fearful of what on earth we were coming to, especially some of the workshop titles, that, yeah, they really were a bit strange sounding. In fact, of course, we found a very Christ-centered, worshipful environment of Christians, very sincere about their faith. And amazingly, Bren, more than me even, was so won over by this that when we went home after that conference, she was the one telling everybody in great, very excited terms that it was clear that God was working amongst gay people, it was clear that people needed partnership and we should accept it. And whereas people hearing that from me would say, oh, well, of course you would say that. And from her, of course, it was so unexpected to hear her being so positive and affirming of this. So anyway, we're now known as the ministry that not only had a new approach, but became a gay affirming ministry, which has completely changed our outreach and in some respect the people who come, although many of the people who were with us in early days rejoined us because they realized that, you know, we were scratching where they itch. And it's been marvelous to see some people from very early days coming back and being so grateful for the fact that we've taken this approach and that they can be Christians again, in a sense, and enjoy being evangelical Christians and pursue their faith in a gay-affirming environment. So anyway, that's probably taking far too long.
That's all right. It's a cruel thing to try to make you tell that story in 10 minutes.
Yeah. It's very, very tough.